This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, Brock and Salk here on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com as well. And Brock, in the midst of all of the Mariner insanity, don't forget there's another story in town here. These Seahawks are finishing up mini camp today, and we're pleased to be joined by Russell Wilson, Seahawks quarterback, who takes a few minutes with us. Hi, Russ. Good morning.
What's up, guys? Good to be here.
How about them Mariners?
That's pretty crazy, huh? They've been playing pretty well and exciting. Obviously, you want it to be cool to have a playoff team here in Seattle, and obviously, and they've been trying to get there, and hopefully they can make it happen.
I don't know, man. You're a Yankee. I don't.
Yeah, but you got a first pitch, right?
Don't you have
a first pitch tomorrow night?
Of course,
but, makes me so uncomfortable. This Yankee thing.
Listen, I've always been a Yankee in my heart.
That is not cool.
Stop. That's true. Should we restart this?
Let's restart. Let it roll.
No, we can't talk about this.
But
it's too upsetting.
Listen, ever since I was a little kid, my great uncle used to take me there. And I remember sitting right behind home plate going to a game in Yankee Stadium. So ever since, I've always loved Derek Jeter.
Were you a Cowboys fan and a Duke fan and an Atlanta Braves fan? I mean, were you just a front runner?
Actually, honestly, I am and I was. I am
because you
I
love
was.
Winning.
I love winning.
There you go.
But I actually did have a genuine passion for the Yankees. It was different for baseball for whatever reason. I think that one because they won all the time, but I think more importantly, it was really kind of the tradition that they had, and just I love playing baseball growing up and everything else. So.
We got to get something else off of our chest. This Mr. Unlimited thing.
Unlimited.
So I'm in. So, I'm all in on this.
All right, you're in.
Well,
I got to be honest.
Can I hear you do it?
Yes, but I got to be honest first. When I first heard it, I thought it was the worst thing I'd ever heard in my life.
Yeah, it's okay. It grows on you.
I told Brock, we can't play this on the air. It's not fair to Russell. You can't be a franchise quarterback and talk like that. He can't lead. This can't work. That's what I said. I said it all in the air.
No, and we didn't play it like on that first day. Like wait,
then,
we can't do it. Can't do it. I don't like it.
With it. Then you backed it up out here at training at whatever camp it was. OTAs. And then you went back for video number two. Mm-hmm. And you're so committed to it.
I'm committed.
That I'm in. I'm in. So I would like to be Mr. Unlimited's like sidekick if I can. Like,
okay.
I'm in.
All right.
I'm 100% in on Mr.
All right.
Unlimited.
Yeah, okay. I got to hear you do it.
Unlimited. I'm in.
All right. Brock, I just got to hear you do it.
Brock's nervous. No, I don't got that in me. I'm not capable of doing that.
Really, it was a funny joke between me and Janet. And so we just started saying it. I don't even remember how we started saying it. It's like, we gotta put that out there. But it was also kind of a thought process. We were talking about how you have to think. And it was started off with a funny joke, but it's really kind of how you should be thinking about your capabilities, and not just me, but everyone. And it's kind of a mentality, a fun mentality, just to think about it.
What are going to be the capabilities of this offense this year? I mean, compared to what we saw last year, new offensive coordinator, some new personnel around you, how does it look different in 2018?
Well, I think, first of all, Coach Schottenheimer's a great coach. He's doing a great job of translating the playbook and for us to the field, and guys really understanding what we're trying to do. I mean, the guys are looking really, really sharp. We have a great receiving core. The tight ends look really, really good right now and playing really tough and making some plays. And then, the running backs, we have a great stable of running backs, and those guys are working better than ever. It's exciting to see those guys work every day. And then really for our offensive line, I think Coach Mike Solari has those guys tuned in, and I mean the communication up front, and there's actually.
Are you gonna have more time to throw the ball?
Yeah, I definitely believe so. I think these guys, what Britt's doing, and obviously having Dwayne Brown here from the beginning of the season in training camp, and all that stuff, and his leadership, that plays a major role. I think that we actually have a consistency up front right now, with the ones in particular, which we never really had. We always kind of trade places and put people in, which is good. But then at the same time, there's no consistency. And with the line in particular, those five guys, you need that. You need that consistency. You need that nucleus of those five. I think we have that. And in the sense that, and then we have George Fant coming back, and to see him compete and train every day in the mornings, it's exciting. So I think we're going to be a very explosive offense. Like, we've always been explosive. But I think that we're going to have a wide range of explosiveness. I mean, from all the runs, you know, we're not just wide zone anymore. We're going to have a lot of different schemes and up front. And in terms of the passing game, I think that our protection will be better. I think our calls will be better. I think we'll be a lot sharper, and there's a lot more there to do. And then I think, you know, obviously always down the field, you know, we want to make plays. And so that'll show up on game day. You know, we're excited about that.
Is there anything new for you, Russ? At NC State, you had a West Coast system with Dana, and then you go to Wisconsin. There's a lot of power, play action. You have your zone. Is there any, like, new football that's energetic? Like, wow, this is pretty cool. I've not been able to do this, or I'm excited to get to this aspect of the game.
Well, I think the best thing that I ever got to do in my college career is, one, being in the West Coast offense, and then being with Paul Christ, you know, at Wisconsin. I really got both worlds, and I really fully understood both worlds. And so here with Schottenheimer, it's really those two worlds, and it's basically all those worlds combined. I mean, there's a lot that we have on our agenda, and we're getting all those things in. I think the most exciting thing for me is kind of the freedom, the full access to it all, and really you'd be able to use that at all times. I think that helps.
I know Coach Carroll has talked about with us here in this room, in fact, Russell, just a singular voice. That, you know, there's nothing against Daryl and Tom, anybody else that was here, did a wonderful job, won a championship nearly too. But just that he wanted one voice for you in particular, just one voice for this offense, instead of co this, co that, everybody's together. Do you feel that with Coach Schottenheimer?
Yeah, for sure. I think that obviously he leads the meetings. He's in the quarterback room all the time. You know, he's really coaching us and really breaking everything down and what we want to do, and getting that knowledge is huge. He's an exceptional coach. I mean, he's exceptional. And so I'm excited about that opportunity.
Give me an example of that. When you say that, what's something that stands out that, man, he really is a difference maker through these couple months that you've gotten to spend with him?
Well, I think, first of all, we're not spending a long time in the meetings. You know, in the sense of the team meetings, he breaks everything down, explains everybody, knows everybody's role from the line to the receivers to the running backs. He explains it, gives a visual picture of it all. Then he takes it back into the individual meetings, where that's where he comes in with the quarterbacks, and then we really dive into the whys of whys of football, and diving into why our footwork has to be this, why this coverage, what we're going to do, how we're going to adjust the adjustments within the concepts, and within what the defense is doing, and the alerts and the checks and the changes. I mean, there's a lot to that. Without saying too much, I don't want to get me, but you know what I mean, Brock. And I think that that is critical to playing football and being a successful offense. I also think our tempo is going to be exciting, and just some of the things that we can do, and how we can also slow it down too.
How about your own tempo? I mean, I'll admit I worry about you. Hashtag no time to sleep. I worry. I'm serious. I'm not trying to be a. I'm not messing around. I worry about you. You do a million things. Is there such thing as too much?
No, I think that when you have your priorities straight, I think that when you football is a thing I love and I get to do, and I've been graced by God just to be able to have the opportunity to play the game of football. As a result of that, I also have other opportunities too as well. And I think that when you surround yourself around really, really good people, and I think when you surround yourself around people that have, you know, like mindset, in the sense that, you know, they are helping you to do the things that you want to do. You know, I think you're referring to the business opportunities.
Yeah, there's so many, I'm not trying to be flip about it. You're involved with so many different things, and you want to go in your helicopter, and at the center of it all is this job that takes up an enormous amount of time, and film study, and working out, and all that. And you're a father, and I'm a father. I don't have any time. I mean, like, I feel like I don't have enough time for anything, and I'm involved in one millionth of the things you do, and my job isn't as hard. How do you have time for it?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's a very viable question. I think for me, you know, every day, and Mark Rogers and I have always talked about this, you know, everybody only has 24 hours in a day, and it's really how you want to use those 24 hours. Me, I don't sleep very much.
I mean, seriously, how much do you sleep more than 4 hours a night?
I probably sleep legit 5 hours.
So you have 19 hours left in your day. You got to shower, you've got to eat, like, other things have to happen. I don't understand how you have the time for the rest of it.
Yeah, if you saw my schedule, it's every hour, every 30 minutes is planned out and written out, and I have an idea of what that is, you know, from the time I get up to, you know. And so for me, for example, I'll just give you an example for today. you know, so, you know, without saying too much where I'm going to be, you know, I get up at 5:15, let the dogs out, boom, 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 you know, eat my breakfast, whatever, get here around 6:15, meeting with you guys from now to about 6:45, 6:35, whatever it is. And then I go do, movement stuff. I'm a movement specialist, and I also work with Janet too as well. And so I do both of those things till about 8:00, 8:10. Then at 8:15, I go to meetings. 8:15 till roughly 1:00, we have practice. Go through practice. After that, watch film for an hour, and then you know, I have a meeting downtown for Fred Hutch meeting. You know, and so that's gonna be exciting. You know, for cancer and stuff like that, and what they're doing, and meeting with those guys, and then. From there, you know, I have the rest of the day planned, and then, you know, I have family time set aside. I actually write family time, you know, what that is like. And then it goes back to, you know, body work, you know, treatment. And so I literally, every minute's, you know, orchestrated. And so it has to be that way, though. Mm-hmm. And I think the big thing that people think and worry about is, I don't play quarterback in everything that I do, meaning that I don't have to, like, in other words,
you don't have to be in charge of everything.
Yeah, I mean, I have an understanding of everything, and I know what I want to do, and I relay that and I say, hey, this is how I want to do it. This is where I want to go. This is how we want to do it. And then they, you know, our team, my West East team, they do a beautiful job of making all that happen and orchestrating all that. And then when it's time for me to be there, I'd be there, you know. And
how is that different when you are here and you are the quarterback? How is that different in the locker room?
What do you mean by that?
What is your style then when you've got to relate to your teammates and you've got to act a little differently maybe than when you're dealing with all your business opportunities?
Well, I think football is different. I mean, football is something that, you know, you've been able to do since we were, you know, 3-4 years old. So, you know, here, and this is what I get paid to do, and this is what I love to do. Like I said, God's graced me with the opportunity to play ball and to lead. And, you know, I think that for whatever reason, God's given me many talents in that sense, and so in terms of football and other things in life, and I want to be able to use those talents. It would be a shame for me not to use every minute of the day.
How different does this place feel?
Man, the culture is great right now, and I think that we're doing an amazing, amazing job of keeping everybody together, and the youth, and the it just feels fresh. It feels brand new, and it's exciting to be here.
Where will we see this look most differently? When the fans come, today's the last day of a mandatory minicamp. When the fans are out here in, 5 weeks for the start of training camp, and they're sitting on that berm, where will they see or feel this thing the most different? Will it be in scheme? Will it be in style? Will it be with so much new, fresh personnel? Where do you think there will be the greatest difference in feeling for those fans on the berm?
Well, the interesting part is I don't think it needs to feel drastically different. I mean, when you really think about it, we were 9-7 last year. We should have had 3 more wins, realistically. We should have been 12-4. You know, there's nothing. There's not some epiphany of change or some drastic change that needs to happen. And I think I want to make sure that that everybody understands that, even players. You know, there's not some like complete overhaul change. Like, we're still the Seattle Seahawks. You know, we're still a team that is a winning football team that knows how to win. We have a coach that knows how to win. We got players that know how to win, and it starts with that. I think that for us internally, we want to have the biggest understanding of each other. We want to have a biggest understanding of what it takes to win, because we have a lot of new faces. I think that's going to be the biggest thing for some of the new fans and fans in general, is that, oh, okay, there's a new face here, there's a new face there, and they'll get to know those faces very, very quickly, because these guys can play. And it'll be exciting. And it'll be exciting just to see some great players play ball. I think the other thing that'll be interesting is just our overall scheme. The people who have great football IQ will really understand what we're doing offensively and everything else, and the creativity that we're having, and how we're really mixing up the schemes a lot. The running game in particular will look really, really good, and that's exciting. And we need that. We need to be able to run the ball. You know, this is a physical football game. and you have to be able to run the ball, especially in our division. You have to be able to get the third and ones and the third and twos and all that. You have to be able to pick those conversions up like that, and that will be winning football for us, and we want to be able to do that.
Hey, last thing here for you, Russ. When you look out under center, you used to practice. There used to be like a 25, a 31, and a 29, and some of these different pieces out there. Some are gone. Some you're going to see lined up against, especially the guy down in the Bay Area. Earl right now, is there any conversation with him? He's kind of like in a little bit of limbo, in and out, and doing his thing business-wise right now. Any conversations you've had with him, or how do you handle that from a professional standpoint?
It's a good question. I'm super close with Earl, first of all, and you know, first of all, he's a great friend. I think second of all, he's a Hall of Fame player, and third of all, it's a business, and he believes this is the best thing for him and everything else. And you know, you respect the fact that you respect what he has to go through, whatever that he has to go through. And like I said, I kind of said this the other day, is, you know, we sometimes get distracted as fans and as players or whatever it may be, and misunderstanding that his passion or somebody's passion, if they're not here, you know, he's the most passionate guy I know, and he's the most prepared person I know. I also believe, though, and I wish that he was here, because he makes me better. He makes our football team better, and it'd be great to have him on the football field. You know, so... you know, I can't really get into his, you know, situation necessarily. I don't know enough about it, and I don't know, how he wants to handle that necessarily fully. But I think that ultimately, I believe that he'll be back, and I believe that he'll be here for a long time, hopefully. And so, he's a phenomenal player, you know, and we need him. We need him because he's one of the best players to ever play the game, and he's an exciting, you know, player to watch and play against.
That was Russell Wilson, who took some time early this morning as we drove over to their headquarters to chat with him. Appreciate it for Russ to take some time like that, about 15 minutes out of his, as you can tell, incredibly busy day dedicated to us, which was nice.
He's very similar to us. He wakes up at 5.
Yes. 15. He doesn't seem to nap.
He just doesn't
nap. Goes to bed later.
Yes.
And he manages to cram a whole lot more. Now, he doesn't have to cook dinner. He doesn't have to clean the dishes. I mean, like, he's got some things that we have to do that he doesn't have to do, right?
Sure. But he is a busy dude, man. There's a few things that jump out here quickly. And obviously, the story of the day is, you know, is this baseball team in town that has turned some of the tide. But there's a few things that stand out to me. Number one, you know, Russell's mindset, Pete's mindset is a little bit different than John Schneider. John Schneider said it felt like 2-14 to him. I think you hear from Russell being on the field, and this is what you want. You want a little bit of that tension, right? In difference of opinion to him, he's like, we were 11 or 12 win team. We have two games. He didn't say it, but where we missed so many kicks that, you know, we finished those. We're it's not as if we were a 2-win team and totally starting over. A lot of new pieces, but there is enough here that you do not have to reinvent the wheel. Secondly, I think he is energized by this system. He is energized by the commitment to really understanding how to run the ball in various ways and not having an ego of what we've done in the past, and this is what we've done in the past, and it's always going to work, and we can move all these pieces around. But nope, this is the way it is going to be. I think that's energizing to him. And as you and I talked about, as we were just listening to some of that, re-listening to it, you know, Mike, he has a lot of resources around him. He is not the quarterback of every one of these Trace Me apps, of Eat the Ball, of the Portland team. He is invested with some time and resources, but he's not the quarterback, which is the most important
job. He's a front runner, though, huh? How about all that? Like, oh, he's a Cowboys fan, Duke basketball fan, Atlanta Braves fan, New York Yankees fan. Like, that was...
Winners.
Yeah.
Winners.
But there's got to be a struggle to get to that win, right? You're not supposed to just root for the front runners, Russ.
Yeah.
I was impressed by his comfort, and you know, that's been an issue over the years. We've done some interviews with Russell, and we've talked to him now, you know, a couple times a year, really, since he first came in 2012. And there are times where he's guarded and really he gives you very, not always short answers. Sometimes he will go long,
filibuster,
but say
all the
essentially
greatness of guys.
Nothing, yeah. Right? Yep. I mean, he could just, yeah, you're right. He filibusters, and you're like, all right, well, there goes our whole interview. Thanks a lot, Russ, for just talking about nothing the whole time. And he clearly had done it on purpose. He seemed just comfortable now, comfortable talking about himself, comfortable talking about where he's at, comfortable with his life, comfortable answering some of the criticisms of him. And I think those are all really good things for him at his age and this stage of his career.
I wish he were here because he makes me better. That's a pretty telling comment on Earl.
It is. Now, I'll disagree with him that he thinks Earl will be back. I mean, I hope that he's wrong when he says we need him, because I don't think they're going to get him. I don't think he's going to be back. You better start figuring out what life looks like without him. But I appreciate that he's reaching out, much like Bobby Wagner was, to their guy that they've played with for a really long time.
Can I do an awkward little transition, because I want to get back to the Mariners here?
Please
do. Just as playing against Earl and Richard and Cam and those guys for Russell in that offense has made them better through the years, I can't wait to play the best. And Boston right now is the best team coming. You know, I tweeted last night after that game, bring on Boston. And got a whole lot of tweets, even texts from friends of mine.
Is that like we won Bama?
That live in the Northeast. Yeah, and someone's like, oh, like bring on Bama and be careful what you wish for. And, you know, this is the best team going in baseball, but that's okay. At 44-24, and what this team continues to do night in and night out, the way that they can win in a multitude of different ways, they have speed guys, they have power guys, they have defense guys, they have some pitching guys. They have some bullpen guys. They, too, may not be as complete as Boston, Mike, but this doesn't feel like, oh, if these teams played 10 times in a matchup, Boston's going to win 8 or 9. Doesn't feel that way. They may win 5, and you may win 5. Or they may win 6 and you win 4, or you may win 6 and they may win 4.
I don't know whether we have the piece of sound or not from Scott yesterday when he sat down with us, but we were asking him about his phrase that he used right when he first got here of being difficult to play against, right? Being uncomfortable to play against, and saying, okay, well, what is it your team has done that has succeeded there? And he said, well, it's just all the different ways we can beat you, whether it's the top or the bottom of the order, whether it's a night where the pitching staff is fantastic, whether it's Edwin Diaz coming out of the pen throwing 97 or whatever, or speed or defense. There's a different way every night. And, yep. You know, the win yesterday, I think, showed off a bunch of those things. They won without Edwin Diaz yesterday. They won without Alex Colome yesterday. They were able to not use their top two relievers.
They won without Seager, who didn't play for the first
time.
They
won without Pazos, too. I mean, really, their top three, three relievers.
Yep.
Marco didn't have a great day. He was okay, but only gave them 5 innings.
Yep.
They won despite making an error at third base with Romine, who went 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts and a double play with the bases loaded and 1 out. I mean, he hampered them yesterday.
Yep.
Haniger had a bad at bat in a big spot. Cruz had a bad at bat in a big spot. Segura was thrown out twice in the base paths, one stealing and once at home plate. I mean, they did all these things, and yet they just seem to find other ways. It's D. Gordon's speed. It's Mitch Haniger and his big home run. It's Segura continuing to extend an inning. It's Ryan Healy, who is not hitting for a high average and probably won't. But at the end of that game, when you needed to get back into it after Segura had been thrown out at the plate, well, there was Ryan Healy coming up big when he needed to.
The pitch from Parker. Swing and a drive deep to left field, and this ball game is tied. Going, upper deck, straight away left field, Ryan Healy. Holy smokes! His 13th home run of the year, and yes, indeed, Healy ties it. It's the Mariners 6, the Angels 6. Fastball up and in, and Healy rides it out into the upper deck, about 5 rows back into the upper deck.
By the way, Ryan Healy, pretty pumped afterwards.
This team is unbelievable. There is so much fight. You know, inning 1 through 9, obviously, you know, night to day game, guys are maybe tired, dragging a little bit. That was so special. You know, just battling every single one of the men on the roster today. That was unbelievable. That was fun to be a part of.
That was pretty cool. And to hear how much fun they're having, acting like kids. You know, Scott was talking about that yesterday, too, with us, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say, hey, you know, these guys get paid a lot of money, but at the end of it, when they get out there, they just act like kids playing a game because they really enjoy it. So,
and Gene makes fun of my big head.
That's exactly
right. Nearly an 8.
206-421-3776. Got a few more minutes to grab some calls before we answer the question jerk. At the end of this show, you can text in questions as well at 710-710, powered by Coors Light. As we continue to put the Angels in the rearview mirror, the Red Sox coming to town, and the biggest question mark on this 25-man roster will be in the spotlight tonight. That's next. I'm Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
That was so special. You know, just battling every single one of the men on the roster today. That was unbelievable. That was fun to be part of.
Here's the pitch, the Mitch. Swing and a drive. Deep to left field. Going. Goodbye, baseball. A walk-off line drive. Haniger to win it. Holy smokes, the Mariners beat the Angels by a score of 8-6. Haniger, with his second walk-off home run of the season, is getting mobbed at home plate.
This team is unbelievable. There is so much fight. Inning 1 through 9.
Our team absolutely has no quit.
Get on up.
Baseball.
You'll never convince me they're not saying. Saying baseball.
I put in a request to interview Big Gigantic.
Did you really?
So that we can actually talk to them about this.
Get him in here?
Yeah. And so they can confirm that, yes, those are in fact the lyrics.
Get on a baseball? They're definitely.
Get on up?
Sure. Get on a baseball. Get it's on. All fine. Mariners win, Mariners win, Mariners win. Those were the headlines for the last 3 days. They sweep away the Angels, Brock, and now get ready for an invasion. Red Sox in town for four starting tonight, and I think they can win 3 out of 4. Absolutely. I mean, you got Paxton going during this stretch. You're going to see Leak. You're going to see Wade LeBlanc, and hopefully he can keep that Red Sox team off balance. But I think the big question mark will be what happens tonight. Yeah. Felix Hernandez, who right now is unfortunately pitching like the fifth starter on this team. It's not the way it was supposed to be. It's not the way you draw it up. But Felix Hernandez got rocked in his last outing in Tampa. He was bad in the Dome, and afterwards Scott didn't really sound too impressed with Felix's stuff. Felix said he felt a little unlucky. We asked Scott about it yesterday. He kind of stayed with it, true to his comments.
I talk about stuff. It's, you know, what's the ball doing, you know, coming out of his hand? From my vantage point, I'm in the dugout. You know, you're seeing how the hitters are reacting to it. But, you know, what does it look like? Is there depth to the changeup? Does the fastball have life to it? You know, is it, you know, 89, 90, 91 miles an hour? Is it 87, 88? You know, there's a difference. It may not sound like a big difference, but there is a difference. You know, and you know, is he locating? You know, is he following the catcher's glove? I'm looking where the catcher's glove is, and that's not where the ball's kind of headed towards at times. So, you know, I didn't think it was the best stuff he had, and that's my opinion. Everybody's welcome. You know, they all have their own opinion.
Yeah, but he's the manager, and his is probably going to carry a lot of weight. And so, Brock, as he goes tonight, I think you kind of have to look and see which of these two sides wins. On one side, you have Felix's adrenaline and his pride. It's hard to get that adrenaline going in Tampa and that rotten dome with nobody there and playing yep. a team that you just played a couple days
and
earlier.
And coming off your best game of 8 innings, thinking you're just back to being the guy
and
that
instead,
you were.
Instead, you've got 35, 40,000 tonight. You've got the Red Sox in town. You've got a more of an audience. I mean, there's an adrenaline rush and a rush of pride that I think comes with trying to make sure you bounce back and show everybody you're still Felix Hernandez. But can that balance out diminished velocity, diminished command, and I think what's starting to become obvious, diminished confidence as well. Which side of the ledger ends up winning out?
Yeah, and just, I don't know if the numbers bear all of this out. Just years of watching him in his decade plus, he typically responds pretty good when the moments are big.
Agreed.
When he's faced these teams in the Northeast, the Yankees, the Red Sox, especially back there, he's typically brought some of his best game. Mike, if you're 85, 86 in a dormant dome with 35,000, will be a little better weather night tonight with all the K cards out. With the best team going in baseball, does 85, 86 turn to 89, 90, 91 as it was in the season opener in a packed house where he gave you five good, what, one-run innings, six innings? So, you know, that's what you're looking for tonight. And you're going to have it because these guys will bash him. He makes mistakes. Yeah, he doesn't have movement.
Benintendi and Betts and Bradley.
Relentless, Bogarts, 1-9.
There's no
they,
doubt.
They will get after him.
Obviously, Martinez, 206-421-3776. Brian is in Spokane. Good morning, Brian.
Morning, gentlemen. How's it going?
Great.
So what I was thinking, I was going back to what you were talking about a week or two ago about what switched, what flipped your switch in expecting the Mariners to win and just hoping them that they would win. And it kind of went back to the Seahawks once they started getting their big winning streak going. And it kind of made me think of when I started rooting for stats, because I expected them to win.
Mm.
Like I'd root for false starts. I'd root for the home record. I would want a shutout on defense. So now, like when Lydia Cruz posts that if they win by two and it's more than a one-run win, it doesn't really count.
Mm.
Like I'm rooting for those one-run wins. I'm rooting for the ERA.
Does it count, by the way? Do you have an answer to that one? Do they count if it's by two?
I feel like now they should get more than a win. It should be like 1.1.
1.1, yes.
Or maybe 0.9 because who knows with this team what's going on. But
Lydia, yeah, were you a little disappointed yesterday that Segura was on base when Haniger hit his home run? Would it have been better if it had just been a solo shot so it would have been a 1-1
just
one
added
win?
To the you know myth that is this team
yes.
when we look back on it?
Yes.
I mean, no, I'm never going to be upset about a win or a run. But yes, I do think that that is just a fun part of this team.
There's something also extra fun about those two guys together. And it just continues to point
Hanagura.
Out the best. Hanagura.
The Hanagura. Well, the Hanagura trade, as it's affectionately known.
Where is it known that?
Lydia on Mariners Twitter.
Lydia wrote it.
No, it's pretty common on Mariners Twitter.
Whenever those two guys are involved in something together, there's always a great reason to just think back on that trade of those two guys showing up here at the same time. Most Mariner fans not knowing much about either of them, especially Mitch Haniger, who really hadn't played much in the big leagues at that point.
Well, and
They seem to be at the center of so many of these great moments together.
Best
pointing
trade
at each other.
Yeah, pointing to the best trade in Mariners history right now. There's more and more steam behind that as they continue to do this.
Wow.
I'll say this. Was it Joe there in Spokane when he started to reference, you know, the Seahawks and everything else? Here's where it's getting to the point similar. I want to see this matchup. You know, when the Seahawks were going.
Right, like, you're not dreading seeing the Red Sox.
Let's go, Jim Harbaugh. Let's go. Let's bring on these matchups. I want the best team coming in. And it's not only my eyes that want to see that. Mm. I think the skipper has made it very clear he and his team want it and want to see where they stack up against the very best.
Josh, hanging on University Plays. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Morning, guys. How's it going?
What's up?
Just wanted to talk about buy-in. You guys asked earlier, like, what the point was where there was buy-in. And for me, I've been a Mariner fan since I was 8 in 1995, so I buy in, like, every year, but it feels different, right? So every year, you kind of... you're just hoping. You're like, man, if they could just win 10 games in a row, or, you know, if they could get on that roll, maybe we could sneak into the playoffs. Right now, it's different. We're not hoping for a 10-game win streak. They've done that. They've built that already. So
that level of expectation.
Exactly. So it feels like this pressure is just building behind the dam. And I know it takes a while for fans to buy in, but I feel like once that dam bursts and this team makes the playoffs, or is there, it's just going to be a flood, and everyone's just going to get so stoked in it. You know, it's just going to go crazy here. I can't wait for that to happen. It's been since 2001, obviously, where we've actually even made the playoffs. But, man, I'm excited and can't wait for that to happen.
Well, Josh, you were 8 in 1995. I was a senior in high school. Viking Power will survive through the class of 95. And I remember very vividly with my little buddy Walt here, we'd look at the paper and P classic. Where are we? Where's the standings? Right? We'd look at it like, oh my gosh, look at this. They're coming. Here they come. Oh my gosh, they're coming. The Bears are coming. Look at this. Yeah, I remember that run in 95, as do so many of you listening right now, which is where this feels to me more like that than 01. They're coming. They're coming. And the rest of the league gonna take some notice. And And nobody,
they like 10 games back in August then,
yes,
and then they
nuts. That
went on their run.
Yes.
I mean, that feels a little different, right? I mean, that part seems a little different.
Neither of them. Let's just say this is the 2018 team. Yeah. Okay, they're not 95 and they're not 01. This is the 2018 team.
Yeah, that's fair.
But as far as the national guys that are coming in this weekend, I got a note from a producer friend of mine at ESPN. I don't know if he wants me to share this or not, and I didn't retweet it or anything else, but he's just like, dude, you should have heard the producers. Like, Mariners still stink. They're terrible. They're going to lose 10 in a row. Like, there is still such a negative vibe nationally. And I know when the national guys come in this weekend, this is a cute story. This is a neat story. Nobody picked them. But this is where you change the narrative against the very best.
Yeah, do it in your ballpark. Do it while it's full. Show them the environment, et cetera. And Josh mentions the way that dam may eventually burst and all of a sudden everybody finds themselves in the middle of it. I would say Scott Servais was attempting to say very much the same thing yesterday. Oops, hold on. Turn me back up there, Lydia. Thank you.
You have to play the schedule and keep grinding through it. And, you know, I've said, you know, when this homestand started, we're looking forward to the stretch of games, which a lot of people, you know, a lot of our fans and people said, we'll just wait and see. We'll wait and see. Our team's really good. And if you don't enjoy and can connect with our club right here, you just don't like baseball. This is what we've talked about, bringing the Pacific Northwest. We have a chance to do something special here this summer. Our guys feel it, and the people in the ballpark certainly feel it as well.
I think the people that haven't connected with this ball club yet, it's not that they don't like baseball. It's that they don't know.
Yep.
I think they just honestly haven't seen it. They haven't heard it. They haven't found out about it. Their friends haven't told them. They haven't heard about it on the news. They haven't been paying attention to baseball or sports.
Yep.
And it takes a little while for them to figure it out. Those are the best teams. Those are the ones we love the most. Those are the ones we remember forever. Those are the ones we won't shut up about even 25 years later, like 1995.
Mm.
Those are the teams, Brock, that we will always, always hold on to, the ones that surprised us. And hopefully this 2018 team is going
to
be that
together.
As well.
Okay, my 25s and 2020s.
Sorry.
So watch your mouth.
My bad. All right, let's answer your question. 710-710. Powered by Coors Light. Any question, any subject. We'll answer them next. I'm Brock and Salk.
The
This is Brock and Sox. Answer the question, jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
All right, let's finish this up by answering some questions. 710-710, powered by Coors Light. Thanks for everybody being on the phones today. That was awesome. Trying to give you guys some tickets for what should be a banged-out weekend at Safeco Field. John Clayton will have the next pair for tonight's game. That's coming up at 11:30. And then 1:30 and 3:30, you have tickets available for Saturday night's game with Bob Gross and Tom, and then with Danny David Moore. So a lot of chances to win tickets to get there this weekend.
Answer the question, Kyle. Howdy, Lydia. Fastest week of shows since playoffs run of the Seahawks way back when?
Yeah, but then Mike makes us start the show at 6, and we got to be here at 5. Yeah. So that was show. I mean, that was a long day.
Should we start it?
What, Mike?
Does Lydia want to start at 5, and we'll start up at 6? Like, should we start up an hour earlier, for those shows?
Yeah, no.
What do you think? Lydia, you want to start at 5?
Oh.
I'm good.
You know that's why we hired Lydia, right? So that we didn't have to do that anymore?
No, we hired her because she's so unbelievably talented. She's kind.
Never sleep.
She connects with this community.
We hired her, and the Seahawks didn't make the playoffs. So,
killing it, Lydia. She's crushing it.
Thanks, Brock. Nice.
I'm affirming like Justin, our therapist, did to us earlier today.
All right, jerks, how do you calculate the projected 105 win total for the Mariners?
Win percentage.
Is that what you use?
Yeah, I extrapolate that out to the...
So what do you? If you were to do a calculation, what would be your met? Like, how would you do it? Show your work.
I would take the percentage. So let's say, for example, it's like a 70%.
Oh, really?
And then I would multiply that by the number of games remaining and add it to the total win total, and that would be my total.
You and I do it totally differently.
Really?
Yeah. I do the old X thing where
44 over 66 equals X over 162.
Yeah, that's exactly what I told you guys.
Yeah, 66X equals 162 times 44.
They teach math differently nowadays.
No, that's okay. Exactly what I do.
Me too.
Yeah.
Every old time. School, baby.
Old school.
Get out the abacus.
Class of 95.
An abacus? I mean, I know how to use one.
Mr. Peterson, ninth grade, Allen Junior High, baby. Still remember those principles.
Yep. Use a little X.
Next
All
question.
Right, jerks. What is your favorite childhood snack? Mine is ants on a log. That's what? Peanut butter on celery with a little bit of raisins on it? A few raisins? What's your favorite childhood snack? I get the kids in the house, and the thing that they often have around that I sneak and I'm not is the pirate's booty.
Yeah. It's not bad.
Oh, my gosh. If it's there, it's gone.
So is it something that we ate as kids that we still find ourselves eating today?
I guess so. I don't know. I guess it could be a few of those.
I mean, peanut butter and jelly, does that count? It's not really a snack. It's more like a hearty meal, but right. A little half a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Just
a comfort
it's
food.
It's just awesome. Yeah.
It's just delicious.
What kind of jelly you like in there?
More of a jam person, but...
Her and her mother make homemade apricot
obviously.
Jelly from the garden.
They go apricot.
Which is pretty, yeah. Sad. I can't believe that. That was a lead-in, yeah.
They're in the they're in the book club. They got
what
blankets over their lap.
I'm a raspberry jam.
Yeah, I am.
Raspberry jam person.
Same
How about
that.
You? Same. You? Oh.
Chunky peanut butter, though. For sure.
Next really? Question.
Come on. Get with the program.
Come on, me
become
like
an
Jim
adult.
Mora.
Become an adult.
Come on. Come
get
on.
To be an adult.
You
chunky
just come
butter.
On me like Jim Zorn or Jim Mora. Oh. Come on.
jerks, I hate to be this guy, but are we still going to feel the same way about the Mariners when they lose 3 of 4 this weekend? If they were to lose 3 of 4,
if
yes.
If that's a text,
yes.
Block him. Ban him.
If they lose 3 or 4 this weekend, I will still feel very good about them. But I don't think they're going to. I think they'll be all right.
Agreed.
But no, I'm not going to look at 4 games and see them as different from the, 68 games that came before them.
68 games. How many times have they been in uncompetitive environments? 3?
Yeah. There was a game
where Leak
just got rocked.
Felix got rocked against the Giants.
Felix got rocked once. Leak got rocked once.
White Sox, Leak got rocked.
Yeah. I mean, you've had like 3 or 4 games.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, but that happens.
That's it.
That happens to every baseball team.
Sure. But in 68 games, that's all you've had. They've not been competitive.
Yep.
So these guys play their guts out, and they play hyper-competitive games, which I expect them to be. And it comes down to a play here or there. That is baseball.
Can you imagine them not playing hyper-competitive? That's just who they are. That's how they're wired.
Correct.
One observation from being at the stadium yesterday, I feel like in years past, I would have seen people heading for the exit sort of like around the seventh inning. It would have been like, okay, yeah, it's time to go home. I want to beat traffic. I want to get out of here. But I just did not see that. Even when the rain started coming down, people were still in their seats. They're just getting out their hoodies.
I would agree.
Like, hey, I'm bunkering down. I'm not missing this game.
When I had to leave because yeah, I had no to go one was pick up Avery.
Nobody.
I was the only one. There was nobody else leaving at that time. It was just me.
I only saw one person that was front and center in the camera get up and leave.
I didn't have a choice. What, I'm supposed to leave Avery at school by herself?
Call an Uber. Avery, there will be a Prius there to pick you up in 10 minutes.
I would have if I could. I believe me, I thought about it.
Next question.
Jarek Salk, you said your parents are coming to visit. Is Walter coming also? And what kind of dog breed is he? Walter's not a traveling dog, unfortunately. Okay. He's an English Cocker Spaniel. Good boy. Not a traveler.
Very
good dog.
When do they get in?
Some have said the best.
Late tonight.
Late tonight.
Yeah. My dad had me shopping for him already.
Oh, I know.
I had to go
for
yesterday.
Walter?
No, for himself. Oh. I had to go get my dad his Raisin Bran and
so mama,
special lactate milk and some blueberries and have to put a sign on the blueberries that says, hold for Papa Larry, do not eat.
So, Grandma, so your mom's going to root for the Mariners. She's got that
100%,
spirit in her.
Yes.
Should we bring Larry on tomorrow and just, like, get into it with him? Because he's rooting for the Red Sox, right?
Yeah, he will. I don't know. I told him that he couldn't, like, bring any gear or anything.
I don't think he knows enough about the Mariners to get into it.
I would agree with that. My dad doesn't know anything about the Mariners.
He's going to be like, Mitch who?
He will not have any idea who Mitch Haniger is. No. Zero chance. He knows who Felix is. That'd be about it.
Come on, Felix. Answer the question, Salk. What's Felix's line tonight?
4 2/3. 2 runs. Throws a lot of pitches, but manages to kind of get almost to the fifth.
And someone gets him out of a jam in the bottom of the fourth.
And then we'll take our chances with the bullpen and see
what
happens.
Of the fifth. Okay.
You?
I think he's going to go 6. I can't imagine him going more than 6. I really hope we're both wrong on this, like, preseason projections. Hard to imagine he's going to go more than 6. But if they're hyper-aggressive, thinking they're going to just get after his stuff.
You ever see the Red Sox look hyper-aggressive?
No.
Never
so
seen that.
Let's go 6. Let's go best case. Let's go 6.
That sounds good.
Like the opener.
Count
one
me
run.
In, man. That
one
would be
run.
So phenomenal. Well, if that's the case, we'll be playing our favorite music when we get on in here this tomorrow morning. We'll see you guys at 7 a.m. John Morosi's going to sit in with us for the 9 o'clock hour. We'll talk a ton of baseball. We'll talk about this upcoming weekend series as well. Looking forward to being here again tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. Till then, the hay.
Barn, barn.
See everybody.
This team is unbelievable. There is so much fight. Inning 1-9.
The excitement in Seattle is insane. It's insane.
This is a chopper!